Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
I'm opening.
We have
an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another Anatomy of a Movie here on the Popcorn Talk Network. The sound of that does not mean we're doing Apocalypse Now, but we are doing The Gift, the 2015 movie by Joel Edgerton.
That's right.
John and I have put our differences aside to join forces to do this movie. Welcome, John Comerford.
Good to be here. Thank you, Phil. What differences are you talking about? Because we don't normally...
Off air. Yeah,
okay, got it. Off air.
Anyway, just joking. John and I are very good friends on and off air. This was a fantastic movie for me. I really enjoyed it. All the hype about Fantastic Four, I thought this got a little bit lost.
Yeah, I think it did.
But I thought, you know, if you compared movie to movie, this was the by far the better movie.
I think it was extremely well crafted. I thought it was a much better movie than it's getting publicized about, because it's not getting the press that you wanted to. But it is a sleeper hit to some degree. I mean, because people are starting to hear about it and they're really like, hey, this is a good movie. And it's positioned well because it's going up in the summer with, you know, as you just said, Fantastic Four, which... Well, let's just say it didn't meet expectations.
It did not.
So I think a lot of people are really finding this because of that, for one reason. And then the word of mouth on this is really good.
Yeah. And by the way, just in general, five movies this weekend came out that were overall major movies. You had Fantastic Four, Shaun the Sheep, The Gift. End of the Tour wasn't that big. And then I forget the other one.
Yeah.
But this one actually, you know, it... In one weekend, it made its money back.
Oh, yeah. Easily. So, then some, too. So congratulations to them. And a small budget. Well, I guess, comparatively speaking, but for the kind of movie it is, I guess you can say that it's a decent budget, but you had some good stars in there. So.
And kudos to, where is it? Where it's STX Entertainment. Yeah. It was their first theatrical release.
Nice.
So kudos.
Good for them. Smart, whoever saw it and decided to distribute it, or bought the rights to it, I should say.
So, you know, obviously...
Renamed it, by the way. So, but go ahead.
Yes. They did rename it. What was it originally?
Weirdo.
That would have not been a good title.
Yeah, that's what Joel's title. Edgerton was the writer-director. He named it Weirdo. And then when they bought the rights to it, they changed the name to The Gift.
Yeah. As funny as Weirdo would have been.
It sets up a whole different kind of movie. Something like that. Weirdo.
Yeah, more of a comedy, perhaps.
Yeah, you think. Yeah.
Anyway, obviously, Jason Bateman blew this out of the park for me as an actor. But before we get into, like, the story and stuff like that, you know, this really is Joel's movie, so I want to get into that.
Mm-hmm. And Joel was surprised to me because, you know, I first came upon Joel, I guess, on Kinky Boots. I think that was the first time I saw him. And by the way, when I was doing the research, I went, wait a minute, he did Kinky Boots. I did not remember him from the movie. And I liked the movie. I don't know if you ever saw Kinky Boots, the movie.
I forget.
And it's the one where they, you know, the British shoemaking company has to make Kinky Boots in order to survive. It's Chiwetel Ejiofor is the guy that comes in and is the trans person that, not person, I guess trans vestite. Just trying to make sure what my trans was. And anyway, and after that, he makes a movie called Warrior, which is about an MMA fighter. I mean, the range on that guy to go from a very small, humble, unassuming owner of a shoe factory to being an MMA fighter and being very convincing in both roles, and then goes on to be Ramses in Gods and Kings. Extremely, I just thought it was varied roles and great range. And then he's also writing, because this is his fourth film that he's written that's been produced into a feature. Three other films which he didn't direct. This was his directorial debut. I was just impressed with his, you know, I really liked him in those movies as an actor. I had no idea he was even writing.
Yeah.
Had you been aware of the other films?
I mean, I've been aware of the other films. I was not aware that he did them.
Yeah.
But he has...
I think she just has a great mind. And, you know, most people, to an extent, would be like, I'm going to write this, I'm going to direct this, and because I'm an actor, I'm going to star in the movie.
Right.
So the default would have been, okay, he's going to be Simon.
Right.
And I appreciate his notion of, I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. Let's get someone else to be that role. And, you know, and part of it could be that he just wanted to play the weirdo, but it was also a strategy from a shooting perspective.
Yeah.
He didn't go into it. He didn't shoot himself until 2 weeks into it once things were kind of going smooth.
Yeah.
And he shot himself out in 7 days.
Yeah. Which is impressive. First of all, the 25-day shoot is pretty impressive. And then wait 2 weeks to shoot yourself and only, you know, shoot yourself out in 7 days. And he's working with a guy, Jason Bateman, who just came off of directing his own movie, Bad Words, last year, of course. And he had to star in that one, otherwise he couldn't get it made.
Yeah.
So I thought that, I'm wondering, I would really like to hear what Jason had to say about working with a first time, because that was, Bad Words was his directorial debut. I wonder if, I'm sure they found some sort of simpatico elements to that, because I'm sure he's going to be thinking, look, I got to help this guy out because I know how hard this is to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So. And I, you know, it was, Noel is Joel's brother.
Wait, Nash.
Nash, that's it. Yeah. It wasn't Nolan.
Yeah,
no.
I know.
That would be too weird.
They look so much alike, too. So.
Nash. Nash took over for that period of time, but I'm sure...
Yeah. When Joel was acting, Noel was behind the camera.
Yeah.
Nash, geez, now I'm doing it.
So Nash did that, but and you know, part of that was because you know, Gordo the weirdo and Jason Bateman's character Simon were on screen a lot of times.
Right.
So, but I would have been interested to see if Jason kind of took a step back and kind of shot some scenes himself.
Very interesting, Matt. Yeah, who knows? Maybe.
I mean, you know, it's an interesting comparison right off the bat, because I thought this. When it was advertised, I knew very little about this movie.
Yeah, I knew
nothing. This took me by surprise. And so when it's at Jason Bateman, and I'm like, okay, this is going to be a comedy. I don't really want to see another comedy right now. Obviously not a comedy.
No, not a comedy at all.
And, you know, so I thought to cast Jason Bateman in that and for him to be that great, because even Bad Words...
Yeah.
Was a comedy.
Yeah, I mean, you could see the inklings of him being a serious, a dramatic actor, because there are moments in that in Bad Words that are just they're not played for the humor of it, and there's a lot of pain underneath it and stuff like that, and there's a history, there's a ghost, which very similar to this in a sense, is that, you know, there's a whole story going on that you aren't aware of until about, 100 minutes in?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's great. And I thought that... It was wonderful to see Jason in a straight on dramatic role, and clearly the guy knows that can handle that no problem as much as deftly as he handles all the comedy that he does.
You know, it's always interesting to me once you kind of have, obviously Joel's been working on this a long time, and it wasn't until January 13th of this year that Jason Bateman was cast.
Yeah, go figure. And they started shooting on the 19th or something like that.
Yeah. And so, obviously, he has such little preparation.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're delivering this movie August 7th.
Yeah.
It's from shooting to completion.
Yeah, that's impressive.
They went fast.
Yeah, very fast. Yeah, to finally get him. I mean, I don't know the story about how Jason got on board, but he got on board January 13th. They started shooting less than a week later. And then the movie's out in August.
Yeah.
That's just impressive.
And Rebecca Hall, she was signed on since November of 2014. So she's had a lot more time to prep the film. But
to give that performance. And I don't know how long he'd had the script or how much he had a chance to work on it prior to actually, quote, being signed on. But that's just impressive.
I mean, this really paints him... in an amazing role. He is a fantastic actor. Because as I mentioned, you know, the whole reason I was talking about comedy, I knew he can do comedy, but I've never would have guessed to a degree that he could go this deep.
Yeah.
Even with as dark as Horrible Bosses can be at times, obviously it's a comedy.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, he's the straight man in that. And he's kind of been the straight man in most, even Arrested Development and stuff like that.
He's the hub and everything else happens around him. And he plays that role great. But what I liked is they were so stingy about giving information and they just kept peeling his layers. And I was saying this before we went on the broadcast. I really like that you just started getting little touches of the bully that this guy was. Just little moments here and there where you didn't really fully understand it until he's beaten Gordo up behind the karaoke house.
Which is the most ironic thing, because he's saying, accept my apology yeah. while I beat the living crap out of you.
And you could just see that the bully mentality is that when you have somebody that's looking like a victim, they just go after them. They can't help themselves.
Yeah. And, so we're obviously starting to get into story.
Yeah.
And we'll kind of start to get a little bit more focused. But I really loved the symbolism of Simon Says.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was just fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I thought what was great as an overall thing to it was ultimately you make up your mind. Mm-hmm. Because they were very, unclear, even from the early moments of, yeah. okay, what is truth, what is not, mm-hmm. who can you believe, and it teeters that line.
Right.
What about for you as
and
a...
How much of a lie, what it can do to somebody's life, and, it doesn't matter what the truth is, because if the lie is believed, and it's perception, and, I mean, I thought those were wonderful themes rolling around in there. It was great.
Yeah, what else, was that the most hard-hitting thing for you, or did you find,
I think the most hard-hitting thing for, as I'm watching is the power and the pain of the dishonest moments, the way that you lie and how you perpetrate that lie and what it can do to somebody's life. And that when, whether that, for instance, what happened to Gordo, that a lie is put out there and he's harmless, or no, I'm sorry, not harmless. He's unable to do anything about it because it's already out there. It's already believed because of who he is, and he can't get it back. And the ripple effect it has on the rest of his life and how much it's been. And I just thought how horrible and evil it was to perpetrate that kind of evil on him and then never do anything about it, just let it stand. And I because thinking about my own lives about how horrible things have happened to people and how that the right thing hasn't occurred for them for whatever reason, or when it does, I don't know, for me that was a big sticking thing that I just was just terrible about.
Here was from a writing perspective, because I think I've seen stories like this. Yeah. The natural thing would have been where Gordo the weirdo,
yeah,
would have really been, as sad as his story would have been, he would have crossed the line eventually.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then Simon would have been like, okay, listen, man, I was just a kid. I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to do it, blah, blah. And then eventually Gordo shoots him or
something
like that.
Yeah, it would be something like that, where Gordo would become the weirdo that in to the nth degree or something like that.
Yeah, and so to not have that and to have that restraint.
Yeah.
I thought from a story and the way they crafted it, it was the best thing ever.
And even the end, I mean, because the question still it remains.
Which we're gonna, that's what,
well,
by the end of the,
until later?
Well, the question obviously is it his kid or not?
Yeah, did Gordo actually do anything? Yeah.
And John will give our full opinion on it toward the end.
Do that later. Okay, but since I can't talk about that, I do want to talk about just the way they ended that. Joel decided to end it with him in the hospital, peeking out through the glass doors and looking at the effect that he's had on Simon crumped down there in the hallway, and basically returning the favor. Okay, here's a lie, and you don't know if I did it or I didn't, so I'm gonna let it rest with you, and let's see how you deal with it.
Yeah.
And then he just walks away and takes the sling off and the whole thing, and you're going, ooh, how far back did he plan this?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. I mean, because so you got to kind of, it's very Alfred Hitchcock in the sense of, you take a left turn out of your house or you take a right turn.
And
if you take the left turn, mm-hmm. it could be a whole different day than if you took the right turn. Yeah. And so I guess let's start with the inciting incident, because they move in.
Yeah, brand new house.
And they meet Gordo. So the question begs to be answered. Did Gordo know that he was moving back?
I don't think so. I completely bought that. I don't know if it matters, but I mean, because I guess it would only say that he'd been planning us longer than we thought. But I thought the chance encounter was enough for me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. What's your feeling on that? Do you think? He could have been, researching him, finding out where he is and stuff, and learning that he's moving out there. And who knows? He could have paid the real estate agent to show him this house. I mean, he could have been all kinds of things. But I don't know. It's not important to the story, but
it's not. But it certainly informs kind of our character. I think to an extent that he knew a little bit about it. And they do.
Why do you think that? Why do you think that? Because of the key?
No, not because. I think he could have gotten that in some sort of other way. I think he was just kind of a little bit well informed about Simon, mm-hmm. and to a degree, I mean, Simon's success.
Yeah.
Not that it's like he's a public figure, but right. you know, you could kind of find out about it.
Yeah, but that's what my feeling is. That's why he didn't do it. Yeah, I mean, meaning, if that was the bully that was in high school, I'm sure there are people out there who are probably, you know, going, what the hell are they doing now? Because they, you know, want to know if their life is good or bad, because that might give them some sort of vicarious thrill. Yeah. But I thought, you know, once Simon Gordo saw them at the, whatever it was, Urban Warehouse.
Bed Bath and Beyond, whatever the hell it was.
It could have gone either way for him, too. He could have, I think, to some degree, he did want to put it in the past. He did, I think, part of him really wanted to let bygones be bygones. He wanted to move beyond it because he needed to, and he needed to let that go so that he could move on with his life and actually get on with it. But because of Simon's actions, he said, well, I was going to let it go, but now I'm not.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. You know, again, the blurring of the line, because the address, if the address wasn't said in that scene, then you can argue that he kind of had been planning this for a while. But the question, right, later on, they're like, how did he get our address? Well, because you said it verbally.
Yeah, it was right in front of him. Yeah.
You know, and he just had, whatever, you could say he happened to remember it.
Yeah.
And I thought, I thought from a character perspective, and this is where, you know, you can help answer this question. Did Simon really not know, or was he pretending not to know? Because
you mean when at the Bed Bath and Beyond?
Yeah, whatever. Because if you go to the World's End, there's a great quote in there. It's not the fact that he did those things to me. It's that when he looked at me right now, it's as if he didn't remember, and it's as if those things didn't even matter.
It didn't matter to him. Yeah, I don't think he recognized Gordo until he heard the name. I didn't think he did. Did you?
Has he? I mean, because that whole it was a little bit trite, but the whole kind of motivational speech of the past of the past, and you know, forget that. I thought that was the only like
which time was that?
It was almost like a quick montage when she.
Right. Okay, when he was like, doing the montage,
you know,
right,
just put it behind you. You know, you can't focus on the past. We have to focus on
the part
the
I liked about it was, you know. Here Simon is, he knows who he is at heart, he knows what he did, and he knows to some degree he's still doing it, but he's just doing it in a much more obscure way. People aren't seeing it as much, whereas he was a complete bully before. Now, I mean, let's face it, this is what he did to what's his name, Danny McDonald, or whatever his name was. So you can see him still doing, in fact, he's still bullying his wife. I mean, the way he said the discussion is over or whatever, and you can see he's just a bully. But he's doing it in a less obvious way now because he's an adult. He's finessed it a little bit. So I think the whole montage of him saying things like, look, we just have to move on. Time will heal all. And that's what he's saying. Yeah. That's what you think, but it isn't healing anything. You want to be in denial about it because you hate what you did and you know who you are.
Yeah.
So that's why I liked that part of it. Although I you know, it could have been done a little bit more,
Well, I get it. I mean, here's the thing. By that point, I'm pretty sure I was torn off of that character, and so no matter what he said, number one, I wasn't going to believe him. It just made my anger, like, you and your cliche lines.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I loved about it. It's like, you keep trying to throw this salve on the wound. He's like, that's not going to help, this little platitudes and stuff like that. No, that's not going to work, because he doesn't want to face any of it. That's what I liked about it completely. He doesn't want to go back, and he keeps trying to convince his wife, no, we just need to move on. And it's because even to some degree, he hasn't moved on from that. He's still doing it.
Yeah. Ah, man. So, you know, in terms of, I thought it was really well laid out. And obviously, the house is a big staple, which is in Hollywood Hills, by the way.
Yeah.
So they shot it locally.
Yep.
But every time he comes to kind of visit, you know, the friendship keeps progressing in an interesting way.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you feel about that?
Well, it was good because you could argue each point, because you see Robin as this person who's trying, she has compassion and all this other stuff, and she thinks, man, he's just misunderstood. And I go, well, yeah, he is awkward, but, you know, he doesn't seem like he's harmful. But then you go, oh, but wait, no, he is pretty harmful. So I thought they played that line great, and I could see why she would want to be friends with him. It's like a hurt puppy dog, and she wants to heal him.
Yeah, and when I, you know, they also gave him action.
Yeah.
Right? So he's helping out with the TV, and obviously that's the song that he
comes back to play. Yeah, which is good. That's terrific.
So it's just one of those, and a great joke was made of that. Just let this guy fix your entire house and then tell him off.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I get.
But didn't you love that part where you know, we see the, you know, Simon, you know, scratches out the word, lines out the word Gordo, writes weirdo. And then, you know, he's in there fixing the TV and you're just going, oh God, he's going to go in the kitchen. He's going to see that. I mean, that whole time I'm going, ugh. I mean, that was like, that's saying the bomb underneath the table.
Yeah.
Talk about Hitchcock. Cause I'm just going, oh shit, he's going to see that.
it was done so well both times because number one, when Simon is writing that.
Yeah. It's just kind of a thing,
but you, mm-hmm. but very clearly, it's more of a wide shot because you don't cut away what I remember.
Yeah.
You see her and she's just kind of cleaning up and doing her thing. Mm-hmm. And he's the one that writes it. And we see very clearly weirdo. And even if we don't, we kind of get a sense of, you know what he's writing.
It's not like they do it. I don't think they did a extreme close up. I don't remember that. I think I like the way it was done in the wide. And then when later on you're talking about when he actually sees it, it's done.
Yeah,
in the wide again, and you're just left to
Because you know by that point the night you know that he's gonna go see it, right? So to the Alfred Hitchcock ticking time bomb, but even more so, she's unaware of it.
Yeah, and I'm just going
because in some sort of way, number one, she would have I think erased it.
Yeah,
first and foremost.
Yeah, I was waiting. I wanted her to do that in the scene when he actually wrote it because it just but. She doesn't, of course, and she can't in order for the plot to move, but I wanted her to do that.
Yeah.
So, but it didn't say it. But, and of course, it comes back to bite her.
So. Well, you know, and again, that's not her action. That's just...
Yeah, but in that scene when he's fixing the TV and you know he's going to go into the kitchen, inside the whole time before he's going into the kitchen, I'm just going, oh, crap, he's going to see that. Wow, that's going to make him feel horrible. Did you have that experience? I loved that. That made me feel for that guy.
I knew, you know, I knew that was going to happen, and obviously I don't mind that I knew. Let me ask you this, though. One of the interesting parts for me, because I knew so little about it, I didn't know tonally how it was going to fully go. I mean, to me, after watching, it's more of a thriller, whereas at some moments... Because of the way they did things, I they were using elements of a little bit of horror,
mm-hmm.
but then obviously didn't go the full route. And
the dog, you know, coming up on the glass door. I mean, they had, you know, nice moments like that, and they work. They always work. And, you know, that's why they continue to do them. And so, but if you do them well, I love it.
I do. I just didn't. You know, I was. And I'm glad they didn't, but they
didn't go full bore with that kind of thing. Is that what you mean?
Because, but it was an interesting viewing experience because I still didn't know where it was because obviously it's an original thing. I didn't know how it was going to play out, whether it was going to be more thriller or horror.
Yeah.
And if they would turn that switch on horror and all of a sudden I'm just like in my seat. Whoa, scared.
Exactly. No,
chillless.
But, yeah. And I like that. And you know, they did some nice little turns. I mean, when the everybody's there having the dinner and they hear something land on the roof and then the window shatters, the glass, and you think, well, who else? It's got to be weirdos, right? It's got to be Gordo, but it turns out to be Danny McDonald. And so you get that great X-Boz, but you covered it all with all this other stuff. And Simon gets revealed in front of everybody. I thought it was great because, I mean, did you think it was going to be?
I
didn't think it was going to be Danny McDonald. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I did not.
Yeah, so they had those twists, which I think were great. It was like, okay, terrific. Way to go. Pick something that we weren't expecting. That was nice.
Yeah, and you know, and that's what really kind of really starts to unwind this, because
everybody knows him to be what he is.
Yeah, his boss, I forget his name, right? The guy who's rooting for him. I thought that was fantastic the way it was played out.
Kevin, wasn't it? KK. Anyway, let's move on.
Yes, Kevin Keller.
Yeah,
Keeler. Played by Tim Griffin.
Yeah.
So, but I do want to go back to that fantastic scene, the dinner scene, right? So, Gordo comes unannounced, mm-hmm. and then she's the one who invites him for dinner. Yep. Hey, just, you're here, let's stay,
I made food. Yeah.
And he's just so uncomfortable.
So awkward, it's great.
And I thought the conversation was so naturally organic because you can see in some way... Where this guy would be so angered because he's talking, you know, you're talking politics, you're talking religion, you're talking about, you know, and it's just the guy that won't shut up.
And he's had too much to drink, and yeah.
You know, but at the same time, now, obviously, in hindsight, you understand what he's really aiming at.
Mm-hmm. Right, and also, you know something happened years ago, and you know he's had years to think about it. What would I say if I ever met up with him again?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, all that to me was in that scene. Without him, you know, having to say too much about it. I mean, I like that he was, you know, ranting about other things, but he never really talked about the thing.
But again, it's so wonderful, and that's where every one of these bits has a question. So was he really just trying to poke mm-hmm. holes at this, or right. was he like, you know, as he said, like, you know, I'm all about turning negatives into a positive. Like, yeah. is he at a point in his life where he's actually doing
well,
that
that's why I'm
and finds it
yeah.
funny that, you know, Simon says whatever, it's great, as opposed to, again, you know.
That's why I'm saying, for me, what worked is, I think at any moment he could have gone either way, meaning Gordo. I think he was legitimately, I'm really happy that things turned out, because I think it seemed like to me, as a kid, he was one of those that was just a real positive kid, who probably, you know, just was misunderstood and was a little awkward, and so people teased him like crazy, but he really had no animus towards anybody, and I still felt like he wanted to be happy for somebody that's been successful. But he also harbors all that pain of everything. So I think at any moment in those interchanges with Simon, he was thinking, well, when he's saying things like, I'm really glad things turned out so good for you, I think that was honest. But because Simon wasn't forthcoming, wasn't apologetic, there was nothing there that was redeeming, it kept keeping him on this, I want my revenge too. You know what I mean? That's what I thought was really good about that character, is that any moment he could have gone either way. And because if Simon had said, look, you know, I was horrible to you, and you didn't deserve it, and I shouldn't have done that, I think if he had said that in that first meeting, in that first dinner, I think that would have been enough for Gordo.
Mm-hmm.
I think he would have been okay. Don't you?
To an extent, yes.
Because I don't think he really was an evil character.
Yeah, no, but he played it so brilliantly. Do you think, I mean, was there an infatuation towards the wife, Robin?
I don't know. I think, again, that was one of those that was wonderfully blurred. But for me, I don't think it was an infatuation so much as, I think what he responded to was the fact that she seemed way more understanding, open, sympathetic, compassionate. I think he probably hasn't had a lot of that in his life. And that to me, I think to that character would be very inviting and alluring.
Yeah. So,
but I don't think he really wanted to have an affair with her or anything like that. I think that all that was, I didn't think he formulated that plan until after he got the letter. That's my feeling, but
fair
knows?
Enough. This is where Jason's Bateman's comedy does come into play. The scene at the other mansion, the other house, whatever
yeah.
we're calling it.
Yeah. The fake mansion.
What did you think of that? Because it's the start of the turn, at least for me, of his character.
Yeah.
Because he's, you're like, this guy's like pretending to have his, like, what the hell is going
on?
Is
that's what I'm saying. That was one of those first moments where you get to peel the layer back and say, this is not a nice guy that as nice as we'd seen him. You get to see, ooh, he's not the nicest guy.
But it's in a joking manner.
Yeah.
So you're like,
but that's why I think it works, is that it's, you know, you could write it off as always just being, but I go, no, that's part of the evil coming through.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. But I go, did you at all think that, because as it was happening, I turned to my wife as we were watching, I go, there's a nanny cam in there somewhere. Something going on in there.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're kind of left alone in a house, especially that big.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, oh, geez.
Yeah, this is not. And then he wants to go search. Do not go searching. And that was lovely that they saw the monkey and had the monkey there and stuff. He had a nice little.
Yeah, I thought that was a little motif. I think it could have been played up a little bit more.
Yeah, I wanted a little bit more of it, but it was weird and freaky to see it at the end.
Yeah, they never explained why.
Yeah, no.
He feared monkeys, right?
Well, a lot of people do, but but they didn't say specifically why this character did. So that would have been interesting to find out.
Fair enough. That scene was just so funny, and I guess if you really analyze it, the indication that he really is doing something kind of that's more characteristic of him is because the wife, right. She says, please stop.
Yeah.
It crosses the boundary for her.
Yeah, because I think he revealed himself in a way that she had never seen, and it was not at all to her liking, of course, but I think it was even more than that. That's what I loved about the scene, is that this is the first time we get to see a truer sense of who he is, and even so she got to see it, and that's, you think that's why it was overstepping the bounds for her. And secondly, I thought that was great because I don't think Goro would have had the plan without it. Yeah. I mean, he basically took his plan and said, you know what, that's not bad, I think I'll do that. Because who knows, if he had not said those things, would Goro have come up with the plan that he did?
So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, that's your own point. Words are going to get back to you, because who better to learn about how to be a bully than to use the bully's own words against him? I mean, that's a great teacher.
One of the things that I was going to ask, you know, oftentimes, you know, for me at least, right, I try to look towards elders and see how they handle difficult situations. Mm-hmm. So in a way... Right, so that was the first kind of indicator that this guy is a bully, or that he's not saying who he is. He's not the guy who drew the heart,
right? Yeah,
at the beginning of the movie.
Because doesn't his charm work for him in the beginning of the movie? He does the thing, and it's Jason Bateman, so it's like you're very much so. He's carrying everything with him. Everything we know of him, he's charming, he's funny, he's, you know, all those kinds of things, and then it gets worse and worse.
And so the scene where he tells him off, right?
Right.
I think number one. Yes, if he kind of went a lesser way of like, hey, you know what? We just moved in. We just need a little space. You could obviously then write him off of like, okay, this guy can't actually handle tough situations.
Right.
And then there's another way of handling it straight on. Mm-hmm. But this was just a dick way of handling it.
Yeah, it was a dick way.
Just no tact whatsoever. No, that's not how, like, we all face and have to have difficult conversations.
Exactly. This was not the best way to handle it.
You know what, buddy?
Yeah.
I just really need you to shut up. So I got to power through this.
Well, I mean, and you're going, you can see, again, it was great, very revelatory, because that's an inkling of how he handled it in the past with this guy, because he's carrying all that history with him, too. It's like, I just got to shut this guy down, and here's how I do it, because this is what he remembers. Mm-hmm. And it's different when you're a kid. You know, but it's kind of how he did it. And then, you know, the nth degree of that is when he's beating him up. It's like, oh, so that talk didn't work, so I got to escalate.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, and that was a great start to the questioning of Rebecca Sandy.
Yeah.
Because obviously she kind of overhears the conversation. She's like, honey, I need you to get in the car, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then that's really the questioning begins, because that's when Jangles gets taken away. And okay, is this really him? Is this in her mind? Because there's the debate, did she leave it unlatched? Blah, blah, blah. It really opens these great doors.
It was great that they put that in there about her backstory, which is losing a child, having the drug problem, and all that other stuff. Because then, you know, as an audience, we're going, they did such a good job of not letting us know, well, what is it? Is it him? Is it her? What's the deal? Is it the drugs? You know, you just don't know.
And it also, you know, puts her in the spirit of which this is intended, in a fantastically lesser position, because he tries to know every one of the people that he ever deals with in his life.
Well, he's got his files to prove it.
Yeah, and so to be able to use, you know, to have all this, you know, she never questioned him about anything before this.
Right, yeah.
And for him to have all this information of like, hey, honey, we got to have, what is this? We got to have a talk, blah, mm-hmm. blah, and just... Again, the whole, and you just shut up. He's exactly. about through this. Not that he said that necessarily, but the mentality there.
It's kind of a bully's way, yeah.
So, by the way, I mean, okay, so also one of the things that I guess, you know, he is, he's having his buddies over from work.
Right.
And he's telling them how great the interview went.
Yes.
The interview didn't go fantastic. Like when the guy left, right?
Yeah.
He just kind of left.
Well, okay. Kevin was saying it was good. They really liked it. I think it went well. He said it went well.
Mm-hmm.
So, but.
But I think, I don't know. Number one, that could be one of those.
He was boasting more than he, you know, was trying to make it sound better than it was?
Well, I think from Kevin's perspective, you know, I think because he really likes Simon.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's going to tell him whatever, even if it went bad, right? Uh-huh. It's one of those things, like, let's say you had a terrible pitch meeting. I was like, it wasn't so bad. No, they got it. They got it. Whereas I think from, you know, the interesting part would be from Simon's perspective, he knows that this guy doesn't like him.
Right.
So how do I get that job?
So, regardless of whether or not the interview went well, I got to get that. Yeah.
Yeah. And if it's two guys, that's an easy target.
Yeah.
Destroy the other guy. Yeah. Then I'm guaranteed.
Yeah.
So I think that's... I don't know. I'd like to read it into it that way.
Sure,
because
that,
I think it
absolutely. It would, yeah, and it, I think to the point, it wouldn't have mattered how good that interview went because he wouldn't leave it up to chance.
Yeah,
he'd find out who am I up against, and he'd and then he'd do whatever he could to destroy him, which is exactly what he did.
Yeah, poor guy.
But he's very good at his job, destroying other people. Anyway,
yeah,
that's what I mean by that.
And okay, so once we kind of go beyond just Simon, Simon, Robin, and Gordo.
Yeah.
Once we get the sister and the mother involved, how did you? You know, I thought that's when
we expanded the.
We expanded the universe, and it was really.
Well,
great.
I thought Allison. I liked the neighbor, Allison Tolmie. Yeah, she was good from Fargo. She was great, Tolman. She was wonderful. I just liked her, and then that you're talking about that, and beyond that, into the getting the information from the sister.
And then, yeah, and then eventually you go down to the chiropractor, Greg.
Right, yeah.
And that's where that's when...
It's like, yeah. I mean, I thought that was nice because you could really see her. They laid it in very well, her not trusting her husband anymore and wanting to know more because he's not telling her. And he's clearly avoiding the subject. So because she's got that thing in the cross, she can't get rid of it. So she wants to figure out what the hell's going on. I thought that laid that in well. Like, you could see her really, really wanting to know and not being satisfied with the answers. And as an audience at that point, I'm going, yeah, yeah, come on. I want to know too.
And they, even with the chiropractor scene, Greg, they gave you enough truth, but then they withheld the final part until it was the confrontation.
Yeah, that was nice.
You would think that for someone that's been doing, he would be a slightly better liar.
Yeah.
Because when he does come back from actually, you know, she wants him to apologize to Gordo. And when he comes back, he's like, yeah, no, he accepted my apology. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just, you're like, no, you make this stuff up. Stop. Because even before then, you know, there's that great scene with the mirrors and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I just can't believe a liar anymore.
Yeah, that was a great line. I liked it a lot. But I also liked when, I think the reason why he, because I agree with you, in that moment, he didn't have a really good, solid lie or story for her. Mm-hmm. And because you'd think he would have thought of one by then. But it also speaks to the fact that she's never questioned it before. And I think that he didn't feel like he needed to have a story with her because it's never been an issue. I mean, to that degree, she's never been, well, to that degree, the third degree that she just gave him. I don't think he was ready for that.
Yeah.
It could be. I mean, let's face it. On some level, she had never questioned him. It didn't seem like she'd ever really had any reason to doubt him. So he thought, he was like, I don't have to figure this out. She'll just do what I say. Because if she doesn't, I'll just put her in her place and bully her and tell her the subject is closed.
Yeah. Oh, poor woman. All right. Before we, you know, I want to start getting to some of the technical stuff. But before we fully do that, right, we teased a little bit that you and I would give our opinion on who the child is when it actually happens. So I'll let you open up the discussion.
I don't think it's Gordo's kid. I think it is.
That would be crossing the line for him?
Yeah, I do. I think, and I don't know why I feel this, but I don't think he would do that to Robin. Mm-hmm. I just don't think he'd do that. Because I think it was enough for him. Look, I only need to get him. And it doesn't matter whether I do it or not, if I have a child with Robin or not. I just need to plan in his head that it could be mine or that I did do it. I don't think he would have done that to Robin. I just don't get that because I just don't think that his character was that or would have become that based on what had happened to him. I just don't think that.
Fair enough. I agree with you, but for the, you know, for the reason of he already... He ruined the marriage.
Right.
So, okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Well enough. And then he also ruined his career. The things that meant the most to him.
He didn't even do... Because I don't think that Gordo had a hand in ruining the job. It was all Simon's doing.
Yes. Yeah. So, the ship had righted itself, if you want to call
exactly.
it that.
So he didn't have to, which is great because Simon was his own undoing to some degree. And even in the marriage, he was his own undoing because he couldn't be honest with his wife. He kept lying to her about it. So the fact that he kept lying to her is the reason why she didn't trust him was why she didn't want to go back to the house. It had very little to do with Gordo. If Simon had come clean with her and said, here's what I did, like you'd said, I was a kid, I did something stupid, I don't know how to write it, and instead of lying, if he had a legit apology, that would have taken care of it then. But he couldn't even do that.
Moral of the story, do not apologize while beating up the person you're apologizing to mercilessly. There you go.
Yeah, and I also thought that, yeah, again, it was enough for Gordo's character just to see, okay, now you know what it feels like. Because it's an easy thing, you know, all Simon had to do was do a paternity test. So once the paternity test is done, I mean, now I know whose kid it is.
Yeah.
But that, and
but so the marriage is, like I said, the marriage
that's
is
right.
ruined.
That's right.
And so is the job.
So I think it was enough for Gordo just to put it in his head, say, look, here's what what you're feeling now. I've had to live with this for years. So however long this is going to last, you're going to know what that feels like. Because once you have the paternity test, he knows it's his kid or it isn't his kid. And, you know, here's the other thing. If he learns that it isn't his kid, then it's really easy to get Gordo on rape charges and all kinds of other things because there's DNA involved. That's why I just don't think that would, and he just didn't need to go there. And I don't think he'd do that to Robin.
Fair enough.
So,
all right. Well, I think that's a pretty good explanation. Yeah. So, you know, just a couple of the technical aspects before we fully get into the numbers here. But the film was shot on Arri Alexa with Canon C35 lenses. Mm-hmm. And the cinematographer is Edward Grau. Mm-hmm. I thought it looked beautiful.
I did too. And, you know, we were talking about it's a $5 million budget, or I think it was, did we ever mention it? Okay. I didn't know if we'd mentioned it already. You know, I just thought it looked good. I thought it looked really good. I thought it was, you know, it's like you're in a movie. I didn't feel like, you know, they had compromised anything for having such a small budget. There wasn't any time where I went, oh, we're in a lower budget. Did you feel that? I thought it just looked good.
It felt good.
It sounded good. I mean, the sound work was amazing too.
I thought the quickness of this movie in terms of going from production to post to release is a testament they knew what they wanted to shoot.
Yeah, I think
they
really
were very efficient.
Yeah. And
so much so that the first trailer premiered in April.
Yeah, April 1st of all things.
So,
which I thought was pretty good.
April Fool's joke.
Exactly, sure.
So I thought that was, yeah, I mean, that's a quick, I mean, trailers in itself can take months.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, having done a few, you know. And August 2012 is when it was announced that Joel had written the script. And then, you know, all things have to happen in order to get it made. But, you know, as we've mentioned already, January this year, Jason finally signs on. They start shooting January 19th and they're done in 25 days. So, from 2012 to 2015, when he starts shooting, I mean, Joel, I think, had already filmed it in his head a million times, as most directors do, and knew exactly what he wanted. That's the only way you can get it done that quick, unless you just have, all you do is hunker down for 20 hours a day and just do it.
But even then, the problem becomes when you do that, you get too lost, and you need some perspective to come back to it, and so you need time away from it, and obviously time away
fresh
from
eyes,
it is more time.
Kind of, yeah.
But
even the Valkyries and that song and everything, I'm sure he had, and when he was thinking of that scene, the whole idea of that guy standing there with that surround sound and the Valkyries and everything like that, I thought, he must have thought of that way in the writing stage.
Oh, I mean, absolutely.
He couldn't have done that. Oh, let's just use the Valkyries in post. No, I think
there's very few ad-libbing.
Yeah.
I think there was room for the characters to really play with what they had, but very, very little room for
it. I don't know if this is true. I'd love to talk to Joel about it, but it seems like he really captured what he wanted.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like there was a lot left up to chance except for the little stuff that happens on set where you just go.
Yeah.
And see what happens.
Well, you know, I mean, part of that is any deviation, I think, from the script or from the original intent is because you're looking for it.
Yeah.
You know, you've set up this world already and you know what to look for. And in those moments when something's an opportunity, when otherwise it might be a detriment, you just go with it and you can. To the point, I mean, you know what? Regardless of whether or not this is fully the movie that he wanted to make, when you get a 93% on Rotten Tomato, you just say, hey, totally the movie I wanted to make.
And it's given 93% for us, 7.7 or 7.8 out of 10, and then 7.7 on IMDb. What is it? Metacritic's giving it a 78 as well. And
the thing that I found, the trailers premiered on Twitter's Periscope and really made kind of a social media campaign out of this.
First time they'd use this, is that correct? First time, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's when Periscope was first coming out.
Yeah.
You know, it was a non-existent technology before that.
There you go. And they said, hey, let's try it. Let's give it a shot.
So I thought that was interesting. The only person that I found didn't like it was Norman Willner of Noun. He criticized Edgerton's directorial debut as full of mistakes and bad calls, ultimately giving The Gift a 2 out of 5.
I would love to know what he meant by that, because, you know, I'm sure, yeah, I mean, as we do a lot here when we're picking things apart, there are a lot of times when we like a movie that we still think, well, these are moments that, yeah, if he had done differently, it'd be better. But overall, I don't know how he could say it's full of bad mistakes. I don't know what he's talking about. I'm going to have to read that and get into more.
Listen,
that.
The movie made $14 million to date.
Yeah.
That's... Audiences are
liking it.
If we had to break it down to date, I think Fantastic Four has made 30. Okay? So...
For a $5 million movie, I mean, that's not bad.
Yeah. So I think he's going to be
just
fine.
Would you agree with those numbers? What would you get? Let's say out of 10, what would you give it?
I would give it an 8 or a 9.
Yeah.
You know? And I would honestly... I think I would give it a 9 because it was so... Just for me, out of nowhere, it was refreshing to see. You know, it reminded me of a really good Hitchcock, but a modern day Hitchcock.
Yeah.
You know, I thought visually, you know, but I thought they utilized everything, even the fish, the color of the fish. Like, you could have put goldfish in there.
But he's the nice orange koi and everything. Yeah, it was good. And I would probably give it about an 8.5, something like that. Yeah. I think. And I really enjoyed it too. I also think that. His, you know, because he did the classic ones. You just set the camera. You do a little movement here and there. You know, pushing in and stuff like that.
And again, horror.
Yeah,
horror
through
technique.
Things. And I mean, but he utilized them well. I never went, oh, I've seen this a million times.
Yeah.
But I liked the feel of it and the tone of it. And I thought the sound work was really good. There are moments when it's real quiet and, you know, and all of a sudden you get the whatever it is. And I just thought that was very effective. I mean, they were smart in the choices that they made. It worked for me.
Yeah. So. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for yet again joining us on Anatomy of a Movie here on the Popcorn Talk Network. Of course, we'll be dissecting many, many movies.
Yeah. What do we got coming up?
Well, next week we've got Man from U.N.C.L.E., Straight Outta Compton, and then we've got American Ultra, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just even this year, we got Star Wars, the new Star Wars! So that'll be fun. So there's no shortage of movies. And by the way, if you're a fan of movies and you know, you didn't necessarily see a movie right when it came out, but now you've seen it on VOD, check out our library.
Oh, we have a ton.
There's plenty of them there.
And other shows as well. We got DC News.
DC News, Marvel Movie News, Jedi Alliance. There we've got Meet the Movie Press, Schmoes No, Cosplay
Box
Coach.
Box Office Breakdown.
Box
Office,
Bollywood, which
there
is all about Bollywood movies.
There
go figure. We got that too. Video games make good movies? We got that too. I mean,
things covered.
Things we got so many shows and more shows coming. So whether it's Anatomy or you support the other shows, just watch them. We appreciate your support. Follow us here at Movie Anatomy or at The Popcorn Talk.
And I just wanted to thank you again, Phil, for putting aside your differences so we could spend an hour to talk to the people without it showing up on air.
You know, I was going to forget bygones. I've already forgotten them. Now you've brought them back in.
That's
so
right.
We're going to deal with this off air. Follow John Comfort here at, you know, on these shows.
At Popcorn Talk.
And we'll see you next time on another Anatomy of a Movie.
Producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.